Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast with me, Alison Perry. Welcome back. My guests on this episode are Izzy Judd and Harry Judd. Harry, as I'm sure you know, is the drummer in McFly, and earlier this year, Izzy published her second non-fiction book, Mindfulness for Mums. So similarly to last week's episode, this is in two parts. I initially met up with Izzy and Harry back in December in a meeting room at the Penguin Books offices. But then so much has happened since then that Izzy and I decided to catch up on the phone a couple of weeks ago. So in the first part of this episode, Izzy, Harry and I chat generally about family life. We touch on the fertility journey and Izzy talks about writing Mindfulness for Mums. You can find out more about their fertility journey, by the way, on an episode that I recorded with Izzy back in 2017. And then in the second part of this episode, Izzy talks to me about what lockdown has been like for them and how using the mindfulness techniques in her book has helped her ride this slightly chaotic time. The book's packed with exercises and tips which I found so useful during lockdown, which we talk about later in the episode. But first, here's my initial chat with Izzy and Harry. Guys, welcome Izzy and Harry to the podcast.
Thanks for having us. It's nice to see you again.
Yes, nice to have a bit of a catch up over a cup of tea. Right, I want to know, first things first, Izzy, yeah. How do you think Harry would describe you as a mum?
Oh,
so if I was to ask Harry, what's Izzy like as a mum? What would he say?
Oh, that's hard.
I don't even know what I'd say, let alone what you think I'd say.
I think that you would say that I...
Okay, I've got one thing.
I'm looking for a word. Gentle. Would you agree?
That's a nice way of describing someone.
Yes, I'd say. Yeah, that, I'd give that a tick.
As a mum, anyway.
As a mum, yeah.
And orderly.
Gentle and orderly. Mm. Would you agree with that, Harry? How would you describe her?
Yeah, I was going to say organised, but orderly is a nicer way of putting it. I'd say patient, something that Izzy has learned over the past couple of years. So, and something she's kind of helped me with as well, patience. I remember when Lola's born, it was something that I always say to people, having children has taught me patience. But that was when Lola was like a few months old and she was a pretty easy baby. Mm. So I kind of laugh at myself then, because a whole new level of patience is required when you then have another one and it's a boy and then they're a toddler and then the girl becomes a toddler. And yeah, so patience orderly, very much so.
And how do you think that Izzy would describe you as a dad?
Fun.
It's literally in my head.
Was it?
That came straight to my head. Fun.
I'd say maybe slightly overly kind of gushy, lovey.
Are you quite kind of emotional?
Oh, I'm constantly kind of just smooching the kids and just kind of cuddling them and Yeah, I guess, I don't know, fun.
Yeah, you've always been really worried. Like, you know how when you've had a baby, people talk about those things like falling down the stairs with the baby in your hand? You know those weird, when you're sleep deprived and you just think of all these awful things? That's Harry. Like, even
all the
time. Now, he's always thinking of what might go wrong or kind of fearful of them. You're fiercely protective, aren't you?
Yeah, like, you know, sometimes just lying there at night and just can't get sleep because I'm just thinking, oh my God, oh, please make sure you check when you're crossing the road.
Yeah, he's woken me up and said things like that.
Yeah, and just like, I must remind my mum who's coming to look after them, just, you know, make sure Kit doesn't go out the buggy because he'll just run off. And,
yeah.
You know, and I once, a couple of times, I just will just go to their room and just check on them. And I, you know, just put my hand on their chest and just feel that they're breathing. It's ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous, though, because, I mean, you are responsible for these two little human beings.
Yeah.
I think it's really natural to think like that.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. I mean, yeah, so... And I just instinctively can't help but whenever I see them, just want to sort of make them laugh. And, you know, whereas we were, in fact, just talking about this last night. Izzy had gone out with Kit and I was like, oh, how was it? You know, she took his mower with him to do some chores around town.
Oh, I love it. His mower.
You know, and I was like, how was it? And she was like, ah, he basically just whinged and cried for daddy for the past couple of hours.
Always. I mean, it's just all about daddy.
Is that
until,
really, is that a bit annoying?
Well, it's annoying in the middle of the night when it's, I want mummy. When
yeah, that's
days,
the great thing.
Daddy.
When they're ill and it's 3 a.m, they just want mummy. I'm just like, fine,
but also,
mummy.
You know, what dads just fail to understand is when it's bedtime and, like, bath time, it's quiet time, right?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Harry comes through the door and it's like,
oh, you don't do that thing, do you?
Yeah,
getting them all riled up.
He really does.
The other day, I was just in the bedroom, and they just start going crazy. I'm like, I'm not doing anything. I'm just, my mere presence is crazy.
Yeah, it's
carnage.
By association. Like, you come in, and they suddenly think, it's fun time, daddy's here.
And also, I don't want to disappoint them and say, okay, we have to calm down now, because then they're, like, disappointed. They're like, oh, but daddy, you're fun, you know.
Oh.
But I have to say, like, just to use this opportunity, Harry seriously is such a lovely dad. Like, you really do, like, at the moment you're really helping Lola with her numbers and letters and you're really engaging and kind of we've really worked it so that we work as a team rather than, you know, one or the other.
Do you have, like, different roles? Like, do you find that you've kind of naturally gone into, obviously you're the fun one, but in terms of just, like, things you do with them, have you naturally kind of got into a bit of a groove?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that sort of transfers into just life as well, not just literally with the children, with everything else that goes on in life. And that's been a process of kind of, you know, figuring that out. Because, you know, again, something Izzy and I have talked about over the past just months even, is how much our lives changed, not just because of children, but now because Izzy has this kind of whole new career as well. And so, you know, pre-marriage, Izzy left her group, Escala, you know, who'd been very successful, and she decided to leave the group. She didn't want to do the travelling anymore. And we, you know, moved into our first house, a flat together, and she was very much just like, I can't wait to be a mum. We were getting married, and we thought, you know, Izzy just wants to be a mum and I'd be off in McFly, you know. And then suddenly we had children. McFly went on like a 2-year break and Izzy was like crazy busy. And it was totally different to what we'd expected. So I suddenly had to step into some roles that I wasn't thinking I was going to have to do, which I found really difficult.
Did you?
Yeah, really difficult because, well, not from like an emotional, oh my gosh, this is so hard, just, wow, this is really tedious and boring.
I love that a guy can just say that, don't you?
But then it's true.
No, but I mean, as mums, we will have a day where it's like, oh God, that's really tedious.
Yeah.
But I love how you can just say that and just be absolutely fine with saying that.
Yeah, and not feel at all guilty. Yeah. Especially, I think, when you have, you know, struggled to have a baby, perhaps you've had IVF or any kind of treatment, I think sometimes you can feel guilty for finding elements of it mundane and boring or hard, because you
definitely
think, actually, I should be cherishing every moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so much thought has gone into, you know, just having a healthy pregnancy and not that much thought about how life is actually going to change.
Yes.
And within relationship and everything.
Yeah, massively. But in terms of the roles thing, I think Yeah, you know, I mean, just from a, like, I don't know, on Sundays, I'll take them swimming. Izzy would rather just stand on the side and watch, you know, and that's fine. And that's just kind of what we're like in life.
I'm with you on that.
She just want to get
Let the dads go swimming.
Doesn't want to get her hair wet.
I don't know how you're doing with the whole getting wet thing and then drying and getting kids dry.
Oh, it's such a faff, isn't it?
It's grim.
But, you know, Izzy,
I do do it, though.
You every now and again, you do do it. But when we did it the other day, you're like, oh, this is fun. I was like, I told you, because the joy you see in the children. But you know, it's classic, like, Izzy just is brilliant. You know, I think we kind of tag team, like, she'll just be like, nope, it's fine, I'm taking them, and off I go. And then she just boshes the tea time bath, just boshes it, done. Whereas other times, I think we kind of divide and conquer. You know, I'll take one, till she'll take one. Or like the other day, I'd kind of been out for a couple of hours. I came back and Izzy had been with them for like 3 hours. And, you know, and that from Kit's nap to like 6 o'clock, you know, that's a stint.
Yeah,
and
it really
fine
is.
To carry on. But I got home and I was like, and the kitchen was just a complete mess. And I was like, right, I can really help out here.
Yeah.
So I just cleaned up the kitchen, stacked the dishwasher, just came upstairs, didn't even say anything to Izzy, and just took both the kids and went upstairs. And you know, and it didn't even acknowledge it. She just went downstairs, still had plenty of stuff to do herself. And then when they're finally in bed, it's like, thanks for that. So, yeah, that's okay. And I'm not saying, oh, okay, I'm amazing. It's just I think I've finally figured out that those little things are actually really helpful.
Yeah,
and it's learning. I think I've learned to communicate what's helpful, because sometimes I think there's an expectation that you just think that you know what each other
well,
feel.
They should know.
Yeah,
and you get a little bit kind of like, well, I'm not going to tell you.
I know. Yeah. I know. That's it. So
well, I do the same. Izzy comes in when I've been with him for few hours and I'm like, my patience is starting to flag a bit.
Aww.
And I'm like, God help, you know. And Izzy will just be like, I'll take over, you get downstairs, you know.
So good.
But the loveliest times are when we're both with them and, you know, you're in a different environment and you can kind of enjoy it all together. I mean, God, you know what it's like, you've got twins, so yeah, it's
I think divide and conquer is absolutely the way forward.
Yeah, I take Kit down to the tip. Take him to the dump, get the car washed. I take him outside, we clean up, sweep the leaves, you know, he just loves that sort of thing.
Mm.
With Lola, it's, you know, do some colouring and or go do some jobs with mummy, you know, it's, yeah. So I think we've got a pretty good rhythm going.
That's really good. Izzy, you mentioned that you were kind of focused so much on healthy pregnancy that you hadn't really had time to think about, I guess, the realities of having a baby and being a mum. Do you think that made... Did that make motherhood harder for you to adjust to, do you think?
Yeah, I really found those... I mean, I would say hormonally I was all over the place after Lola was born. And I just didn't really cope. I just find those first 12 weeks so hard. The breastfeeding particularly. You know, people kind of say, is Lola sleeping? And I'd be like, yeah, she's sleeping like a dream, but I am not sleeping at all. I just, you know, she was actually very straightforward, but I was really struggling. And I mean, I remember like meeting up with NCT friends quite soon after, you know, you just pop to a cafe.
Yeah.
And that for me was so traumatic. And I remember just walking home in floods of tears with Lola, just thinking, how is everyone else surviving? I can't, and really, I probably was the kind of character that just should have not have left the house for a good, you know, some people need to get out. I think maybe for me, I just tried too much too soon.
Needed to just nest in.
I think maybe.
Kind of, yeah.
And just get the breastfeeding established and sorted. And I think was so, with my character is wanting to get things right. So I would often feel that I was failing,
right.
You know, and even now, you know, it's that question of, oh, did I do that okay? Have I done this okay? Do you think that's...
Yeah, I think as well, you're just, you know, you're very organised, but also, you know, you have suffered with anxiety since you were a teenager. And that's probably something we underestimated. I think, you know, you think with a child just becomes happiness and like contentment and oh, everything's just going to be great when we, you know,
especially when you have struggled to conceive.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
that you think, well, that's the goal, and we're getting there, we're achieving
once
it.
Once it's there, everything will be fine.
Yeah.
And in a sense, it is, because it almost gives a slight explanation as to the meaning of life. You know, having a child, it's incredible, but I think, yeah, for anyone like Izzy who's sort of suffered with anxiety, it's something you mustn't maybe underestimate because of the, like you said, the hormones that are going on and the overwhelming feeling of responsibility, particularly that you felt. As you said, you know, some of the girls you met with NCT were just different characters and just, you know, and just slightly more laid back. And I remember you saying they just pop their boob out and start breastfeeding. And to you, that was not that you were embarrassed to do that, but you physically couldn't because of the pain and the. I think the takeaway thing for us is whenever I talk to other parents or people who want children or just got married, is everyone's different. And so everyone does things differently and should do things their way.
Yeah.
And that's just fact.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion.
Also, I wonder whether, I mean, I don't know, you might not know this, but I wonder whether people who've been through fertility treatment might have more of a hormone imbalance when they become a mum, because they've had all of that, all of those hormones and chemicals and everything, all the drugs kind of, you know, injected into them. And I don't know whether that must have some kind of effect.
Yeah, or just, I mean, I do wonder whether, you know, if you have gone through fertility treatment, whether it is a good idea just to have some kind of counselling along the side, because, you know, there's an awful lot you're going through and it stays with you. So even though I now have two beautiful children and I, you know, can't believe it, there are days when I, you know, jump for one, you know, and hope for even one. And I think I don't think I have really come to terms with what we went through, almost quite traumatic.
Yeah.
I don't know if that sounds a bit extreme, but
no, I think emotionally traumatic,
and just never really talked through it.
I mean, you wrote your first book. Mm. That must have been some kind of, was that therapeutic at all?
It was very cathartic, and also we fell pregnant with my son Kit during writing, and I often wonder whether there was some kind of release. Mm. You know, or something that shifted, or perhaps from the birth, you know, hormonally, I was just more fertile. I don't know.
You did say that when you were writing that book, that the sessions where you talked about it vividly was quite hard, you know, quite emotionally exhausting. Mm. And it's not really something I could kind of connect with, because people often want to hear the guy's side of things with fertility. And that's an interesting conversation. But if I was just being really honest, I just wanted a kid, and I wanted Izzy to kind of be okay, and it was just it was stressful, but I didn't have to experience, you know, a percent of what, you know, Izzy had to go through. I think not just from the point of view of taking all the kind of hormones and the disappointment and the pressure and all those other things that come with it, but the actual, you know, physical instinct of wanting to reproduce, like.
Mm.
Desperately wanting that and feeling that you couldn't. So, yeah, I can't really relate, even though I kind of lived it with Izzy, I can't really relate to when she talks about that kind of trauma.
It must have been hard for you to support Izzy through all of that. I mean, that's, you know, that's a really hard role for someone to have.
Yeah, it was hard. It was frustrating, you know, if I'm honest, just from a kind of selfish point of view, it was just frustrating because it, you know, it just pretty much dominates your life as well. But that, you know, when you get married and there's that sort of through sickness and then health line, it kind of, that was kind of thrust upon us pretty quickly. And, you know, you sort of think, well, I've got to be patient and do the right thing here. And kind of try and be an adult about it. And so, but there were frustrating times, you know, we would have argued, and just because it was frustrating, it was something that kind of just dominated our lives, you know, having had a really, you know, fun engagement and pre-marriage sort of just like life of just, you know, being on tour, having fun, and everything was great, and then suddenly this, you know.
And also you were at a different, you know, a lot of your friends weren't even married at that stage, you know, whereas for me, I'm a little bit older than Harry, and my friends were having children, so you were kind of not in a rush, which in a way help me, because I didn't feel any pressure from Harry.
It would have been worse if Harry had been pressuring you.
Totally.
Yeah, I was on tour as well. I was having a great time. You know, but you weren't.
Mm.
So that was hard as well, because you kind of just want, you know, everyone to just have a great time.
Yeah.
And poor Izzy was kind of in a pretty miserable place. So yeah, but here we are.
A lot of parents feel pressure to create a sort of like a magical childhood, when actually, yeah, the reality, like we've said, the reality is quite tough. Do you feel that pressure at all? And also, are you kind of conscious of what you put out there, like on social media, or what, you know, if you're doing like magazine shoots, are you aware of not, I guess, putting pressure on other parents to create some sort of magical family life?
Definitely, yeah. It's been a huge thing for us, actually.
Yeah, we've talked about it a lot, haven't
we? In depth, yeah. And we went through a period of about 2 months, I think, recently, where we didn't, or maybe even 3 months, we didn't put anything on social media of our kids, because we just didn't know how to kind of get our heads around it. You know, we'd spoken before children of, do we want to post pictures of our kids? I felt really strange about it, Izzy was quite relaxed about it, and then suddenly Izzy felt strange about it, but I felt relaxed about it. It's a really, really difficult conversation.
I had a situation where Lola had become aware of filming.
Right.
And I had almost, I think in my heart, I'd always kind of thought, if there was ever a moment where I felt this was becoming not natural, then that's not right. So anything I put out now is usually a video of her, of us singing or playing the violin. Something that's just naturally happening. But to kind of, for her to have to get involved on this kind of social media, whatever it is, at such a young age, I'm just a bit cautious, I think. And I think also, you know, writing a book about mindfulness, I want to be present in the moment with Lola and my family and Kit. And if I'm suddenly like, I need to film this because it's good content, that's not, that really kind of contradicts what I feel about how family life should, you know, be. But equally, I admire people on social media that can just, they don't really think about it. You know, it's just a, their reality, their life there. But for me, I think maybe because I am a bit of a deep thinker, it can play on my mind.
Yeah, it's hard though, isn't it? Because even most families, if something cute was happening, the instinct is probably to get the phone and film it, even if it's just for your own, you know, personal, I want to keep this, or I want to send it to granny, or...
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, it is that thing where if you're constantly grabbing at your phone, because I'm saying with my twins, when they do something cute, I'm like, oh, grab my phone quickly, I want to send that picture to my mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
But you're almost like, you're changing the moment by doing that, aren't
you?
You are
changing the moment. And this is the thing, it's like when I'm at a gig, and or like if I'm performing in a show and someone is just filming every second of it, I'm like, I don't understand, you're here for the live experience. What, you filming it on your phone so you can then go sit in your bedroom and watch it on your phone?
Yeah.
Why not just watch it live, you know? And that's, I think Izzy is like pretty honest there. I think it was the moment that we were suddenly realising, it was like, oh that's so cute, quick, film it.
Yeah.
And then you like put it on social media and you're like, why are we, what is this? What have we become? This is just, you know. And so I think we now have the kind of mindset of, like you said, if you happen to capture a moment and you think, oh, that's quite a nice moment, and, you know, I share it with my followers because, you know, it's a night, we're both kind of lucky. We've got people that follow us are nice. They don't give us abuse.
That's good.
You know, we're lucky there. And, you know, it's then when you get comments like people saying, oh, that's lovely and thanks for sharing this, and, you know, it's nice to see your family, and just really nice, and you think, well, it's just quite innocent, you know. But there's certainly a line for us, you know. And
Lola's starting school in September, and, you know, there's a security aspect, and I don't know, I just...
Yeah. I think it's good to think about it. I think
it
a
is.
Lot of people don't think about it, so it's really, it sounds like you guys are.
We've thought about it too much.
I think
I look at some people and I'm like, look, they don't, they do it.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's fine if they do it, we can do it. And then it's like, but they don't. Ooh, why don't they do it?
You are overthinking it.
Yeah, and I'm like, why? I want to speak to them. I'm like, yeah. So, but then it goes back to that thing. You've just got to do what's right for you.
And yeah, like you said earlier, everyone's different. Everyone's different. You know, whether you're comfortable breastfeeding in a cafe or whether you're comfortable putting, you know, videos and photographs of your kids on social media, it's a parenting decision.
Exactly. Also, I'm like, come on, they're so cute. I want people to see that. I'm proud. Look at them.
With my eldest, we've never put pictures of her apart from on the side or the back. But when my twins were born, I had that same thing where I was like, they're so cute. I want to just share pictures. Yeah. So until they turned one, we shared pictures of them. And now we don't.
Yeah.
But it is that overwhelming desire to just like, I love these little things.
We've
so
kind of toned it down. It's also then when people come up to you like, oh my God, I love your daughter Lola, so sweet. And you're like, what?
Bit weird.
But also like, thanks. That's cool. But I don't need for you to think. If you met her in person, I'd say she's sweet. That's fine. So yeah, I'm feeling like I'm in a bit of a hot sweat about it now, actually. We should maybe reevaluate. I think it's balance for us, you know. And also, we were at a premiere the other night, and I took Lola to Frozen 2.
How did you?
And I saw this really famous family with their kids, young kids, on the red carpet with the paparazzi and camera flashes, and I was like, oh, they're doing it. And he's like 10 times more famous than me. So he's not overthinking it. Okay, well, it's fine. And so I picked Lola up to go and do the photos, and then she just looked a bit scared, and I saw this like group of 30 photographers, and I was just like, no, this isn't right. So I just put her down, and then the lady from the press team was like, oh no, she'll be fine.
Come.
I'm like, I know, because if that's the only chance of this photo being used to promote your film, if it's just a photo of me, it won't get used. But I was like,
oh, it would.
No, but I was just like, I'm sorry. And so she didn't have the photo with me, and I felt, okay, that was definitely the right decision there. Not to say that anyone that does decide to do that is wrong. I just, for me at that time,
you have to trust your instinct and what feels right. It's the same with all things, isn't it, in parenting. You have a gut instinct for a reason. Actually, you've always had really good gut instincts. Like, I remember when the children have been poorly and I've kind of been like, oh, I don't, you know, and Harry might come up with something that I haven't thought of, and I always have to remember to ask Harry with those instincts as well.
Yeah, and listen to him rather than just be like, no.
He's often on it.
It is a really difficult one.
That we've almost come a bit full circle in that, you know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, when social media was all new, we wanted to share everything and it was this novelty. And now people are starting to really value privacy so much more. Mm-hmm. And sometimes something will happen, like a really cute moment, and I'll think, actually, it's really nice that I can just keep that to myself. Mm. That I've witnessed it, I've enjoyed it, and now no one else gets to see it. And that's actually quite a nice feeling.
And the only times we revisit those really cute videos is every now and again. Like the other day, I was just flicking through videos on my phone, and I was like, oh, Izzy, look, this is Lola when she was 2, and oh, this is Kit when he was 6. And we quickly look for a couple of minutes, and then the tumble dryer starts beeping, and you know. And so those are the only moments you really get to like look back on them. So
it's not even like with photographs where you can print them out and turn them into an album or create a photo book. With videos, what can you do
life
with them?
Was just better, I think, back as well, in the 80s, like, wasn't it?
Yeah,
my mum and dad's picture books, they're just epic. They're just like these big thick albums of like photos, and
it's just so nice just to look through them, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel like someone needs to come up with a business idea. Maybe this is an idea for you guys to explore, but what can you do with videos? Like, someone needs to come up with some sort of solution to what we can do with all of these videos.
I just have a thing I'm saying, iCloud full. And I need to pay someone. It stresses me out. I start going through and just deleting stuff.
No,
so
you've
got
to upgrade, always upgrade. I've just upgraded to
pay
£6 a month. I pay for my iCloud now. I've had to upgrade it from £2 a month to £6 a month, and I've just paid it.
But what are you paying, Apple Music membership as well?
I haven't got Apple Music.
Honestly, these guys, like, my direct debits to Apple are just insane.
It's like they see us coming.
I know,
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, Izzy.
Yes.
You have written a second book, Mindfulness for Mums. When things are hectic and busy, is this your kind of secret to success? Is this when you've got both kids kind of shouting for you and, you know, perhaps Harry's not there?
Yeah.
Is this your secret?
I think, first of all, the title, Mindfulness for Mums, I've written it from a perspective of being a mum, but this book is absolutely accessible to anybody that wants to dip into a bit of mindfulness. But it's just focusing on short moments in the day where you can take a moment, just little pockets of time, because I think mindfulness is something that, for me, having gone through anxiety, mindfulness has sort of been my glue that's helped me hold things together. So whether that's been through fertility, through change, through motherhood, obviously the greatest change being motherhood, but the simplicity of just being able to be present in the moment was like a light bulb moment for me within anxiety, that instead of catastrophizing, and it's the same with the children, thinking that the worst is going to happen, but what if, being present and just being mindful has helped me cope with the kind of chaos of motherhood and the things that are going through my head on a daily basis.
Chaos, that's a really good way to describe it, isn't it?
Calm in the chaos.
So if anyone who's listening hasn't, maybe they've heard of mindfulness, but they don't really know what it is. Can you explain?
Yeah, so I think mindfulness is one of those words, isn't it, that gets thrown around. But mindfulness is like, there's a big umbrella that falls under mindfulness, and that's general self-care. It's about, thinking about gratitude and kindness and how to survive. So, for example, there's a really simple exercise that I do in the book called Calm Begins With Me, and it's simply where you touch your thumb with each finger, so first, second, third and fourth, and you just say, calm begins with me. So, for example, it's tea time, the children are hungry, overtired, and they're causing a lot of chaos and noise and whinging or crying, and it's very easy to get caught up in their chaos and to want to go, enough, you know. But actually I found that didn't solve, it didn't make it better.
Didn't make them calmer.
It didn't make them calmer, and I went to bed at night feeling cross that I got cross. Mm. So having something as simple as calm begins with me, you don't even need to say the words out loud. If you practice it every day, it's just a trigger. And you can just sort of remove yourself from their chaos and just continue to be their calm. And I was kind of finding, wow, you know, these small moments are really helping me if I build them up throughout the day. Whereas people might think, well, I haven't got time to sit in a corner and, you know, meditate or do practice mindfulness for 10, 15 minutes. Oh, it's another thing on my to-do list. If I don't do it, I failed because I haven't done that and I should be doing that.
Especially if you are a busy mum, it feels like, you know, you're up to your eyes in changing nappies or you're doing the school run, or it feels like you are just running around all over the place.
Yeah.
So is it realistic?
But yeah. So for example, in the morning, okay, you've, first of all, if you've had a shower and you're putting on your moisturiser, just spend a bit longer just moisturising your face, just to kind of really check in with what you're actually doing. The motion, give yourself a little massage, a bit of nice self-care in the morning. Maybe it smells nice. You know, the children, they'll be okay for 20 seconds if you just really take in what you're doing, just being present. And then you go through the absolute chaos that is morning when you're trying to leave the house, and they don't want to put their shoes on, and they don't want to wear their coats, and Lola, I don't want to wear this today, Mummy, and you're trying to brush their teeth, and you know it, and you finally get to the front door, and it's probably been, you've gone through a lot, and it's only 8 o'clock.
You've gone through a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have.
Now, when you put your hand on the door to leave the house, you have a moment just to ground your feet, drop your shoulders, just pause for a moment and just think, you know, all is calm or all is well. You know, we're here, everyone's survived. Before you turn that handle, just take a deep breath. It might be the first time that day you've actually thought about your breathing or taking a deep breath, or just stop for a moment and then carry on. And if you do all these little tiny pockets, they all add up and they overall will help you manage. Because, you know, I need this book myself. I am very highly strung. I'm, you know, don't find it easy. So I need these little moments to help me cope and survive.
You've mentioned a couple of times that you've suffered from anxiety. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you've had since having kids, or has it been before that?
I've had anxiety really for as long as I can remember. But obviously, as a child, I just didn't know it had a name. I just knew that nighttime for me was scary. And it wasn't because I thought there were monsters under the bed. I didn't like the silence. I didn't like being alone. And that's kind of when it first started.
It's really hard, isn't it? Sorry, you're saying that, you know, that you recognise now that you had it when you were younger but didn't know what it was.
Yeah,
that's a really tough thing to navigate as a child, because I think I probably had something similar where I felt anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're a child, being able to explain those feelings to a grown-up is really hard, isn't it?
Especially as a child, I was obviously I'm a musician, so I was doing, you know, music competitions. I could stand on the stage and do a performance. I would say relatively confident, and you might stereotypically think of somebody that's anxious not to be able to do those sorts of things. Yeah. But actually, it's not the case at all. It comes up in all sorts of different ways, doesn't it? And I remember as a child, you know, being really worried that I'd turn up to school in winter uniform and everyone would be in summer uniform.
Yeah.
And I remember I'd be awake at night thinking about that, but not really communicating it. And I think with Mindfulness for Mums, a lot of it was because I wanted to give Lola and Kit the tools, should they experience similarities, to help them cope and to make them feel confident at night time, and give them little ways to help just switch off mind and body, and things I think that probably would have been quite useful to me as a child.
So do you go through mindfulness exercises with the kids?
Yeah, so Kit's obviously still a little bit young, and
yeah.
I say in the book, you know, they will copy you. So if I go and sit in a corner and, or sit on the floor and just breathe for a minute, for example, they'll set the timer. Of course, there's a fight because they both want to start. and they will just sit and they'll watch, they'll observe. And then there's different breathing exercises you can do with children. There's one in the book called Teddy Breathing.
I love that one.
Which is, well, no, I mean, it's you know, something that has been used. And basically you just choose a favourite teddy and put one on your tummy and on their tummy. And just so that they start to get a sensation of the teddy rising and falling. And all these things, you know, if you're doing them at night time, you might have had a really busy, full-on day, and you've survived bath time, you've got them up to their bedrooms. It's actually quite nice for you to have that moment to just breathe. And
as long as you don't have daddy coming in
exactly.
Get them all excited again.
Exactly. And in the night, you know, I often find I do like a body scan where I just pretend there's either a leaf or a feather, depending on what Lola chooses. And it just puts each part, imagine it just putting each part of the body to sleep. Because obviously to try and explain to a child about relaxing is quite hard. But by imagining this just going up the different, you know, the fingers and the arms and your eyes and your ears. And then if you're awake in the night with them, then it's relaxing for you to hopefully keep your mind quiet And they have got used to it, so it helps to settle them.
That's so nice. Mm. Have you guys noticed a difference in, you know, are they calmer as children?
Well, Lola often, she'll often ask for some quiet time.
Does she?
Yeah, she'll say, I just want a bit of quiet time, Daddy.
That's amazing that she recognises that need.
Yeah, just a bit of quiet time, you know, we'll go and sit on the sofa together and read a book or something. And she'll just say, you know, I just want to go and chill out.
And recently I've been doing, talking a lot with Lola about weather and emotions. So connecting, you know, if it's a cloudy day, you might be feeling a bit sad. If it's a sunny day, you might be feeling happy. But the point is, nothing stays the same. So, you know, I'll say, it's cloudy today, Lola, but tomorrow the sun might be out. And, you know, if it rains and there's sunshine, then we get a rainbow. You know, there's always something, you know, good out of... And it's helping her understand, and with Kit, when he's a bit older, that concept that nothing stays the same. And that even if you're feeling sad today or you're struggling with something, tomorrow it will pass. And it's the same with anxiety. You might be in a really difficult moment, but it will pass.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these things in the book, from my understanding as well, it is... Some of it is for children. Some mothers, you know, people say, oh, God, I can't even consider that with my child. They just won't listen. And that's fine. I think a lot of it is just for the individual, the mum themselves, you know, and I've taken stuff from it as well. So, you know, it's people will find different benefits from it, I'm sure. Another one that has been really helpful, right, you know, even from when Lola was, before she was two, I think, was just when she'd get completely worked up, as children do, like completely hysterical, and was just a breathing exercise with her, where we get her to breathe in and put her arms in the air, and then when she'd breathe out, just slowly let them down. So we'd do it together with her, and she'd be, you know, totally hysterical, and I'd say, Lola, Lola, let's, you know, arms in there, let's breathe. We go, we just do it together like five times, and before you know it, she's like, she's like calmed down, and I saw Izzy doing that, so I've used that ever since, and it pretty much works every time. And with Kit, I used to get so frustrated because he'd get het up a lot more than Lola did. And again, as Izzy was saying, we soon realised that getting yourself irritated just probably makes it worse. So with Kit, when he's totally hysterical, I just have that moment to just take a deep breath myself, just to stay calm with him.
Mm.
And the best way he responds is when he's completely hysterical is I just cuddle him and I just, in his ear quietly, I say, Kit, are you listening? Are you listening to Daddy? And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, okay, so, and I like explain it to him. And he's like, okay. You know, and then off he goes.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't work every time, and I'm sure some kids probably get even more worked up than Kit does, but... You know, I've worked out just a couple of really small things, you know, from what Izzy's taught me that have been, like, vital.
It's funny, though, isn't it? Because one of those is breathing, and the other one is probably the physical touch. It's probably, what's that hormone that we...
Oxytocin.
Yeah.
So it's probably to do with, like, an oxytocin release.
Yeah, yeah,
and
I'm
you
sure.
Just sort of whispering or calmly talking to him.
Yeah, and so you're listening and not... Because, you know, don't get me wrong, sometimes I have to tell him off and discipline him, but... As soon as I tell him off, he just runs. He just turns his head the other way and runs off. And I'm not going to chase after him, like, shouting at him, because it's ridiculous. He's a two-year-old, you know. And so I just wait for him to calm down, and then I talk to him. You know, and I just calmly say to him, okay, well, you can't have your tea then, Kit. Whereas I was guilty before of just losing my temper and just... You know, shouting. And
then also we a lot of us parent in the same way that we were parented.
Mm-hmm.
And back when, you know, I mean, I'm a bit older than you guys, but when we were kids, this stuff wasn't around. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, these sort of parenting techniques and the fact that, you know, that you, you know, you're teaching your kids these skills, it wasn't something that our parents had access to.
No. Unfortunately, for me personally, unlike Izzy, I'd never suffered with anxiety as a child, and so I was kind of, you know, not really, you know, aware or felt like I would have needed that. But again, everyone's different, and some people, I think the mums that you've spoken to so far have just found it incredibly comforting to know that, oh God, yeah, yes, okay, so it is okay to feel that stress, and it is okay to feel that overwhelmed, and, you know, oh, you shout too, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And feel that
so
kind
we're in a generation where mums are much busy, you know, we're trying to do everything. you know, there's a lot going on in that head.
Yeah.
You know, there is a lot of noise. And it's different. Life is so, you know, I often talk to my mum about that. You know, it's so different what the expectation now. And so I think we are reaching for techniques to help us cope. And, you know, there probably are more heightened, you know, mental health issues. And, yeah. and our children are also growing up into that with all the extra pressures. So, yeah, I think it's we've established that there is an amazing conversation going on around mental health. And now it's what tools can we have to help us through those difficulties.
It's so important. Your book is out now and is available in various places where you can buy books.
And I also, it's on Audible. I recorded it, which I love doing because it feels lovely to be able to speak to the reader, especially when we're going through some of the exercises.
I know a lot of people who will always listen to books rather than read them these days, especially are a busy parent.
Mm-hmm.
The only time I read books is on holiday,
yeah.
But I love audiobooks.
Do you listen to them at the gym, or when do you listen to them?
Yeah, the gym, in bed.
Yeah,
you go to sleep, don't you?
I listen for about a minute. And,
yeah.
And then conveniently you've got headphones in, so you can't hear any of the noise in the night.
I've got a friend who says the same about her husband, actually. Yeah. He always sleeps with headphones in.
I have to add a disclaimer to the end of this, that yes, like Izzy's an amazing mom and really calm, and the mindfulness has really helped. But we both still completely lose our shit sometimes.
We're
in inverted commas failing every day still, and you know, and navigating our way through parenthood. And I think to give some context as well, is there's periods of time where we're both around a lot, and then suddenly both really busy. So you know, that's why this is particularly kind of helpful for us, because we are doing it a lot together and stuff. So
I think that life isn't about, and parenting isn't about, being perfect every day.
No,
it's not about saying, guys, we practice it, we use mindfulness, so we never lose our shit with our kids.
I think we needed this, because like I think Izzy needed it, and hence why she needed to write it for herself, because it was that thing of every day, every evening, having that conversation of like, I failed and I lost my temper and oh my God, you know, and then me having the same feelings and guilt and all of that. And actually, you know, this has just helped just to stay, how do you say it? Like, calm within the chaos, I guess.
And I really like actually how when you're reading the book, it just feels like you are kind of like just going through almost like everything you have learned about mindfulness. Like everything is really succinct and crystallized in a way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and the idea is that, you know, you don't need to, again, when have I got time to read a whole book? But you can just dip in and out. You can just pick up an exercise that works for you that day. And it's meant to just sort of be a guide.
It's the perfect book, I think, to have on your bedside table that you can just dip into, like, you know, of an evening before you go to bed.
Yeah.
Maybe when you are putting on your night cream, your eye cream, and then you can just pick up and dip into it.
What was nice was when you did your, Izzy's first kind of mindfulness evening with like 20 mums, and then did a feedback sheet, and was like really nervous of like, oh my God, have I just wasted a year of my life writing something that's not going to relate to it.
No one's going to read
it.
And
no one's going to care or get it and be like, what are you on about?
Classic anxiety.
And everyone on their comments, you know, and people we met afterwards were just like, oh my God, like this one thing has really helped me, and I could so relate to what you're saying there. And you know, thank you, Izzy. I'm, as a mum, I've always suffered with anxiety pre-children, and now with the children, or I've had anxiety since children. And so that, I think, so nice for Izzy to hear. And, you know, we were on hold to this lady in the bank the other day, and she was like, oh, you, Izzy Judd, did you do this book? And she was like, I just want to say thank you. And, you know, little moments like that. Like, I bumped into someone the other day. I was like, Harry, I'm like, yeah, it is me. She's like, you're Izzy Judd's husband. I'm like, oh, yeah, right, sure. And she's like, can you please tell Izzy that I love her book? And I just absolutely, it means so much to me. And you know, I think it's that cliched thing of whatever you do in life, you know, whether it's writing a book or in a band, you know, if you can touch one person, then that's a really kind of privileged feeling to have. So.
And also, I think it's probably one of those books where even if somebody flicks through it and just gets one thing out of it that they remember and that sticks in their head and they then do every day, that's worth
exactly
the cost of the book, and it's worth you writing the book.
Yeah.
And with or without children as well, I'd say.
Definitely, there's certainly exercises in there that adapt. But that's it. For me, it's just to be able to use the kind of social platform. So that's so important to me, with the fertility, that I could reach out to communities. And again, with mindfulness for mums, that it might be helpful, and it's sharing something and making us feel stronger together. And as you say, if it's one exercise that just makes their day a bit easier, then that, you know, means everything to me.
Yeah, job done.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much, guys. It's been a joy to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Izzy, hello, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Alison.
So we chatted, I don't even know when it was, because time has turned into this weird, every day feels like a week, but yet time is going very quickly, kind of other dimension. But we spoke a while ago, me, you and Harry sat down and had a chat, and I wanted to catch up with you and find out what life has been like since. I mean, how's lockdown been for you?
So I always like to try and think of the positives, living in a household with not only a husband full time, but also two children under five. I think what I've really discovered is that I really needed to slow down. A lot of the things that would keep me up at night, where I'd be thinking, oh, I wish we could have more family meals together, or I wish I had a bit more time without feeling the pressure of other activities. And, you know, lockdown has given us that. It's given us all a completely different perspective and an insight into what we can do with a cardboard box, which is also...
Who knew there were so many things you could do with a cardboard
box?
Exactly.
But I think, you know, we're... As mums and parents, we're all being challenged. We're all being stretched to our limits in terms of what we can deal with emotionally, physically. I think, you know, we are expected to work, look after our children, in some people's cases, homeschool. We are permanent cooks. We are cleaning, we're tidying. We are juggling more plates than we ever have. So I was kind of grateful that I had... a few tricks up my sleeve with Mindfulness for Mums.
And in fact, one of the things that you wrote in Mindfulness for Mums is that it's for anyone who feels that they've been thrown in at the deep end of motherhood. And it kind of feels like we're all in the deep end right now, doesn't it?
We're all in the deep end. But I think what lockdown has done is it's kind of given us permission to really say how hard we find things, because everybody is in the same position. So it's almost allowed this sort of open dialogue with your neighbours, with your family, with your friends. We've never been in a situation where actually although our situations might be different, ultimately we're all being challenged in completely new ways. But we're all facing the same challenges and the same difficulties, you know, being separated from people we love, being the demands, the expectations on us, it's enormous. And I really sort of worry about not only sort of the mental well-being for our children, but also for us after this, because so often it's what happens after these sort of situations when we have time to reflect that it really impacts.
Definitely. Mm. How have you been chatting to Lola and Kit about this? I mean, Kit's probably a bit too young to really understand, but Lola must be really aware of not being able to see her friends or go to the park.
Yeah, Kit, exactly. So Kit is none the wiser and just thinks it's great that he's got, well, mainly daddy to himself most of the time. Mummy doesn't really get a look in. But Lola, yeah, she definitely understands. Harry and I kind of made a decision right from the get-go to just talk about it really openly. If we had worries or anything, to just sort of express them so that it became a very normal conversation, and that, you know, we weren't kind of hiding it
behind doors, and that's what felt right for us personally, as a family, to kind of handle it. I did feel slightly, we were out for one of our kind of permitted walks the other day, and someone was,
I like how everyone always caveats it. It was our one permitted walk.
I know, exactly. And we were walking along, and Lola, there was somebody that came towards us, and Lola kind of backed up and said, mummy, someone's coming. You know, and I sort of said, it's okay, sweetheart, we'll just move to one side. They'll move to one side, then we'll carry on. And she'll kind of say, it's the virus, mummy. And I'm like, yes, it's the virus. And so I don't know. I mean, who knows what the right way is? We just do what I guess we think is right at the time. But their behaviour is definitely reflecting how I think we're all feeling. There's frustration, a few changes to their sort of usual temperaments. They're getting, you know, talking a lot more about when can we see granny, when can we see our friends, you know, will I be able to have, you know, my friend over for tea, and when can I give, granddad a hug. Those sorts of things are definitely coming up. Yeah, I don't know about what it is like for you with your, because obviously you've got a slightly older daughter, haven't you?
Yeah, so my eldest is 9, and she's really missing her friends. And even though she's got 2 younger siblings, they're like 18, 19 months old. And so they're fun up to a point. But then she's missing just being able to play with her friends. And like you, we're being really honest with her. Not to the point where we're sitting her down and making her watch like BBC News 24 and scaring her, but we're like, you know, but she's very well aware of what's happening. And as we're getting updates, so things like the schools reopening and all the uncertainty around that, we're kind of just being honest with her and saying, like, it looks like some of the years we'll be going back soon, but your year might not be going back until September. And just trying to be kind of open, but really matter of fact and reassuring. I think for us, that seems to work.
And I think probably as a generation, we probably talk a bit more like that, don't you think, as families? I mean, when I think about, like, looking back to my brother's accident, so Rupert, who suffered a car accident when I was 12, lots of those sort of heavier conversations tended to happen, not behind closed doors, but really, because they felt it was protecting us from, you know, not wanting us to hear the difficult stuff.
Well, that's like adult conversation, isn't it? And I think it was that desire to protect children from stuff that was seen as being for grown-ups. Whereas I think these days we're much more kind of, well, no, let's chat about it and let's prepare our kids for all of this stuff rather than them almost being shell-shocked by it when they grow up and suddenly it's like, whoa, what's all
well,
this?
Well, and also, I think children are really intuitive and I think they pick up on moods.
So, mindfulness. How have you been using mindfulness in the past few weeks? Because it feels like there's been all these extra pressures and, like you said before, you've got some tricks up your sleeve. You've got some tools, haven't you?
Some tricks up my sleeve. I have been doing a lot of calming breathing, not only for me but also with the children. So obviously connecting with the breath really helps to calm down the nervous system and sort of connects mind and body. And it's, we hear a lot about making sure that we take our physical exercise, which is of course really important for our mental well-being, but mindfulness is a tool almost for the mind. So it's practicing it every day. I think, you know, you don't need a load of time, like I spoke about, you know, when we chatted to you then, you know, it's just pockets of time in your day just to give yourself time to pause, to allow yourself to be present, because we are in this situation at the moment where we're with our children all the time, which obviously brings different challenges and it can be very intense. But also there's that lovely kind of chance to just be really present with them and enjoy nature, enjoy baking. I'm a rubbish baker, by the way, but I've tried. some cooking and There's a little exercise in my book called Four Sticks, where you choose four sticks and you place them in a sort of frame on the ground. And say you're doing this outside, you might see a daisy, a leaf, a stick. But you could also adapt it inside with pens, and you could make the square as big or as small as you like. And it allows the children to really focus their attention on something, which obviously helps improve their concentration. And for us as adults, I suppose getting back to nature and the simple kind of mindful activities like nature, you know, we're all hearing that, we're hearing the birds singing, but that all really does help to boost your mood. When the sun is shining, lockdown is much easier than when the sun isn't shining, and that's the same for children.
I've heard so many people saying that, you know, they're going out more because, ironically, because they're going on that one walk, family walk a day. And actually, you know, even if they're just walking around their local park, being around trees and nature and grass and really appreciating it because it is their one walk a day. So it does feel like we're really appreciating nature way more than we were a few months ago.
Yeah, and I've definitely found, I don't know about you, whether this is the same for you, but when I've put my two to bed, so they sort of go to bed around the kind of 7 o'clock mark, I can then often find myself ramping up in the evening because I'm suddenly, well, it's the only time in the day to myself. And I'm thinking of all the things I would have liked to have done in the day in the space of like 2 hours, or work, or things that I need to catch up on. So I've actually found sleep much harder. I don't know whether it's because I am A, busier, but B, also maybe just because we're not as stimulated. Maybe we're not as tired, I'm not sure. But I've found that doing mindful exercises and kind of calming scripts in the evening has given me a chance to almost file my thoughts and given me space to think about everything and reflect. I've definitely felt a lot more reflective and, you know, sort of thinking, is this really what I want, and is this right for the family? You know, I feel like that gives me the time to really think and ask myself those questions, where I would normally perhaps be dictated to by schedules and you know, a lot of technology and phones and everything else. So
yeah, I mean, obviously in your book you talk about this, you talk about how busy our routine is, and you know, we're dashing to nursery or school drop off and doing errands and doing some work and dashing back to collect the kids and doing cooking dinner. And this has, like you said earlier, this has forced us all to slow down, and it'll be quite interesting to see what things we can try and hang on to once life speeds up a little bit. What do you think you'll try to keep going with? You know, what element of this sort of slower nature do you think you'll try and hang on to?
I think I won't feel the same need to get out of the house with the children, and that there's actually lots we can enjoy together slowly at home. Sometimes with the two children, I'm like, right, got to get up, got to get out. You know, we should be taking them here and doing this and doing that.
To enjoy the day.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, like Kit especially, he's basically like a dog that needs to get out and be exercised. But, and there is that element of that. And of course, I will, can't wait for that kind of sense of freedom for that. But equally, not to feel so much pressure, and to be able to sit in nothing time a little bit more comfortably.
Yeah, that's so true. In fact, I was chatting to my friend about something similar the other day, and I said to her that the one thing that I really kind of learned about myself during this period is that I put pressure on myself to enjoy the day. And thinking back to like when I was a kid and my parents would say to me, you know, it's a really lovely day out there, you've got to get out and enjoy the sunshine, enjoy the nice weather. And therefore I've got this kind of thing instilled in me where it's like, you can't just sit indoors on a sunny day, you've got to get out there and enjoy it. And actually, you can just sit in playing a board game on a sunny day. You don't have to be out and going to a national trust or going for a picnic or doing something really Instagrammable. Do you know what I mean? Like that real kind of like picture perfect family moment outdoors.
Yeah.
And actually we can just be indoors, just spending time together and enjoying ourselves.
Yeah. And I think as well, something else I've learned, like a point you were saying earlier, that actually an evening walk to myself is really, well, it's a great bit of self-care that I would never have done before, really. Going for a walk with a friend.
Yes.
You know, rather than going for that coffee, which is obviously much needed as well, but, you know, maybe, you know, maybe going for a walk together and then being able to talk, you know.
It will be so interesting to see how, like, genuinely how things change as things go back to normal. So Izzy, thank you for this catch-up chat. Mindfulness for mums, I genuinely think that if anyone's going to buy a book during lockdown, it needs to be this one, because it is, there's never been a better time to be learning these techniques and the exercises that you've got and just discovering a bit more about what mindfulness can do and why it's important.
Thanks, Alison. I really hope that it supports people, you know, now and also beyond lockdown, and that it feels like it's holding your hand rather than something else you should be doing. It's more
that's
to support
the thing,
you.
Isn't it? You don't want to add more pressure on. It's not a case of, oh, and here's another thing that you guys need to be doing.
Yeah.
It really is a hand-holding exercise. It's like, actually, you know, this can support you and make everything else feel a bit easier.
It is, and you know, just be kind to yourselves, just be really kind, because this is really tough and, you know, we're in absolutely extreme circumstances at the moment, and whatever you need to do in that moment, just to be able to just be present and enjoy it, you know, and not worry too much about what you're going to do in 5 minutes time, 10 minutes time, an hour, tomorrow, next week, you know, just take it day at a time, step by step.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Izzy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Alison. Thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.